Yeah, I was like, I got a red on my hand. Stop saying mm-hmm. Like, too many years of telephone crisis counseling.
That's all you can say in crisis counseling. Holy shit, your life sucks.
Shut up.
That's the worst story I've ever heard. Your life really, really sucks.
And how does that make you feel?
That's a good one. Say that.
That's a good one.
People want to punch you in the face.
Yeah, really.
You'd have to actually be listening and say it at the right time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can just say it.
God, your story's making me feel like shit. Mm-hmm. How does it make you feel?
I have a brother-in-law that they made a big fuss because they claimed he was sleeping.
That happens, yeah. I've heard about that. Never happened to me.
The only thing you need to keep an ear out for is the word kill, myself, death. Then you're like, I'm here.
I'm here for you.
I'm available.
Your eyes fly open.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Can I get you to sign something right now?
Don't do it, or at least don't do it until some days after this phone call.
Yeah.
And then don't say anything.
Sign this waiver,
here,
please.
Call this person first. And then
I'm
going to
refer you to somebody else, and that's that. Oh, wait, are we recording before I get all dark, gallows humor here?
Yeah, yeah.
Jeff sneaks in the recorder when you least expect it.
Don't worry, we'll edit you out.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
It's easy to edit you out.
That's cool.
My software has a certain feature. You just pick the person's name, and then they just swipe them completely out of the recording.
You've never been born and you'll never die.
Yeah. Well, who has something like disturbing that's worth sharing? And we don't want to hear any good shit that's happened to anybody. Mm-hmm. We want to hear, like, you know, I want to know, like, how is this really getting you?
Well, I woke up this morning, you know, you wonder what happens at night where your brain has gone off to. But I was like,
well, your brain probably goes off to some happy land, drifts out of your ears, runs around the house making all kinds of havoc.
I went through a dip before I woke up because I was like, all about cause and effect. It's like, well, there it is. It's there. You know.
What's there?
Is there.
Is there?
It's a real thing. I mean,
you can make up anything you want.
How can you question cause and effect?
Uh-huh.
How many times do you have to drop a ball or a pebble or what?
I guarantee if I pinch the shit out of her leg, she's going to jump and scream and probably hit me.
Wow. I might that would you be in cause the face and effect. Right where your glasses are.
Yeah, it would be. We could create a lot of cause and effect here.
That's what I'm talking about.
Wow. All right. Well, that's cool.
I don't know. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious. How do you get out? How do you see beyond it?
Cause and effect.
Yeah.
Oh. Why would you want to?
Yeah, this could look like cause and effect.
Sure does.
But you know, sometimes we talk about the random, the randomness.
Yeah.
And, it seems to me so often it's absolutely. We don't have to determine, you know, we have no clue, really.
What's determined?
Whatever the next moment holds in store.
Or is determined.
I'm becoming Presbyterian.
Why not?
Go for Episcopalian, they got more money.
Yeah.
They're all about predetermination.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you had...
Go for the Mormons or the Scientologists, yeah.
The universe's knowledge, the next... I know, it's a next moment, it's future. It gets into time.
Of course, right, right. I mean,
it's all about...
The moment we give the appearance of reference, the slightest attention...
Absolutely, that's true.
Time, right?
Bang.
It's bang.
Big bang.
it is a big bang. In a sense, yeah, it is a big bang.
Yeah, no.
If not the big bang. Yeah. But it might be useful to, you know, see that as a, let's call it a working membrane for one's experience, right? Because we'd like to think that if something shows up that I'm either for or against or mulling over or that's bothering me or that I want to be rid of, I want it to be resolved, right? Whenever your attentivity, right, the brilliance of your present attentivity tunes itself or turns its attention to, right, circumstances and events and feelings and wonderments and explanations, or looking subtly for a state change, meaning to feel better about something or less imposed upon by something, then, right, time is, it's wham.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, so that might be fun to begin to be familiar with as, well, let's call it a piece of knowledge or just like a quality of understanding or a reflex that you can count on. And also it's fine to rediscover that fresh each and every time. Yeah.
It's funny to think you're going to challenge a reflex like that and then step back and just watch it still goes on.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't work to, like, the whole life effort of this seeming I is about managing cause and effect.
Okay, sure. Right.
Everything from, you know, wrinkle creams to going to work.
We were talking about that the other day, referring to it as investment consciousness. Right? ROI. Right?
Yeah.
ROI consciousness. Return on investment.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. ROI.
And we think we're doing it. We think that's what we are all about.
Well,
I think this just does what it does.
Well, you can reflect upon your own experience being either satisfyingly or dissatisfyingly engaged in ROI consciousness. Then, if there's a hovering sense of, you know, doer, then that's kind of a bonus. That's a premium, right? That's an add-on.
But that hovering sense of doer seems to cause an awful lot of suffering because the doer is never quite enough because you really can't manage cause and effect here.
Well, it's very strange because you could set all of these very wonderful observations up as peers, not as one being causal for another. Mm. Right? The magnificent, remarkable, spontaneous, evocation of time. Everything is on an even playing field. There's nothing that's prior to it that's actually responsible for it. But you can see all of these symptoms as peers, right? Spontaneously, impersonally arising as peers. Which is fun, because then you can't start attempting to dismantle it from the point of view of what is the lowest common denominator for even suffering that I want to get to, find out, discover, and then deal with it. You can't. I mean, some people would like you to part with your money in hopes of telling you what, right, the core, the root, the genesis of suffering is, and then you apply yourself diligently and at great cost psychologically and financially to root out the root of suffering. Mm. But you can't. Then they don't tell you that at the beginning, right? They don't say, listen, you can't, don't even bother. They don't tell you that.
Should I have it on my Psychology Today page now?
Yeah.
Don't bother.
Don't bother.
There's no causality.
No.
You're going to be so rich. Those people are just going to be flocking to you.
I know.
This therapist.
Well, you never know. You know who, what clients might start showing up and just get that. You know, instinctively.
They don't pay very well. But
well, you don't keep them very long, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very good. They're very good. As referrals.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to see her for 10 minutes and that was it.
I've thought
maybe
about that.
Maybe they'll want to come back and just play like chess and hang out in your presence.
Or talk about movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They would be playing chess if they were
well,
with
it was kind of like Paul.
Watching movies. It would be movie collab if it's
yeah.
We could offer therapy and make
well, there was somebody who did some research thing where they had couples going through difficulty watch movies. and it helped them.
What kind of movies?
There you go. Movies about relationships. Uh-huh. But by watching them and having a dialogue about them, like, mm-hmm. that's all it took, you know. So.
Okay.
Wow.
I'm going to get in on that action.
Nice.
Just have them watch weird movies like The Void. And
well, I was thinking therapy. About Memento, like, you know, in the beginning. Sorry, I can't help myself.
We know that.
He's running,
right? And he's like, I'm chasing somebody. And he's like, no, they're chasing me, you know? Like, it's sort of like that. Like, oh, I'm irritated. Well, that person's driving too close to me in my lane. Like, it... Like, is that the way it is, kind of? Like, you have a feeling tone, and then the myth creates what gets interpreted as, you know, the action that's doing something to you?
Sure. Yeah, that's a way to look at it. I mean, it's not completely true, or is it always going to be that way? But that's, again, it's a, you know, kind of a metaphoric way of looking at a mystery which is otherwise completely untenable. It's off the charts. It's a curious door to pass through where the habit of finding cause, culprit, the responsible party, and then doing something about it, you just stop. That's bizarre.
Yeah.
Because we are so heavily conditioned with respect to temporality, causality, agency, culprits, cause and effect. And so what we call mind, right, or self-reflective, discursive rumination, yes, operates through these apparent memes or strategies of temporality and spatiality and individuation and willpower and agency. And there is a reason that I'm feeling the way I'm feeling, and I'm going to find out what the reason is and who's responsible for it, if not me, someone or something else. And then I'm going to apply myself, you know, diligently to remedy it, or maybe I'll just habituate to this miserable, incarcerative, existential panic and get through the day as best I can by being forgetful and occupy myself with the trivialities of my life and my relationships and my stories and my worries, so I don't really have to feel what it is I imagine I'm feeling right now. And that's an occasional motive, right? There's 1,000 other little vignettes like that one that you could play out that reveal just how clever and crazy and superficial and trivial we are. Primarily inwardly. Who are you fooling out here? No one gives a shit enough about anybody else in the room to even care.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
you
know.
That's freeing in itself.
It's very freeing. Yep. Who are you fooling? Nobody. Why is that? Because no one really gives a shit how you feel or how you think. We really don't. As long as you're not imposing on me with your crap, then, you know, you're a neutral party as far as I'm concerned. If you're imposing on me with your crap, well, then I either have to solve you to get you out of my face or evade you so I don't have to be put upon by your fucking dream. So who are you fooling? You're only fooling yourself. You're only creating a bipolar, dipole, whatever it is, of, right, schizophrenia. More or less compliant schizophrenia within yourself, fooling yourself that you have agency, that there's time, that there's space, that there's causality, that you're going to get to the bottom of this shit that's bothering you. That's who you're fooling. No one else cares, so there's no point in fooling anybody else. Unless, of course, you're a clinical, right?
I read there was a study recently where they had people talking to a recording, and then they gave the... They told them what they said, or they fed it back to them.
Yes.
Only it wasn't really what they said. And they said, how come you said that? And then people came up with reasons
they would explain
why they said it.
Why?
But they really didn't say it.
But they never said it in the first place.
Never trust those guys.
Yeah.
Scientists.
Well, who is it? One of the Late Show talk guys has someone out on the street with a microphone interviewing passersby.
Jimmy Kimmel?
Kimmel. Yeah. And then tells them exaggerated, crazy shit that the president did or this person did. And then they say, you know, did you read about that? Did you hear about it? Why do you think he or she did it? And they all respond as if it did happen, that they knew about it and that they're okay with it or not okay with it and the reasons why. But the whole thing was fabricated. But the moment you're in front of the microphone, right, you become what? An absolutely gullible, impressionable idiot.
You do it to yourself without a microphone. I do.
There you go.
I was doing something like that today. I'm like, I would never do that. I wouldn't do that. And then I like look over. I'm like, I guess I did do that. Well, that sucks. I don't know. Why would I do that?
Yeah. Now, to begin to see the degree or bandwidth of fantasy that we are actually convincing ourselves of, you could say moment by moment, actively, passively, consciously, unconsciously, subconsciously, archetypally, who gives a fuck? Right? But to begin to see how much fabrication, adornment, and embellishment, nearly 100% of it is lies, if not 100% of it is lies, is going on within the privacy of your present experience.
Well, sometimes we think that being with other people or sharing it with other more skilled people or something is actually going to clear it up.
It can.
Like, oh my God, don't leave me here alone with my own head. I have to like share it with a friend or and.
Yes.
I don't know if that's always.
It depends.
You're kind of dealing with people that are just as warped as you.
Well, yeah. I mean, this we might discover if we're really sensitive and we're in, let's say, a 12-step commitment, and we're seeking, let's just call it a kindred soul, to assist me with the things I don't really want anyone else to know about, so that I make sure to place a call to you before I hit the OTB, before I hit the vodka, before I hit the internet porn, before I hit whatever I hit. And so you're out there and you're completely vulnerable and raw, and your addiction has kicked you to the curb sufficiently so that you've actually committed yourself to a recovery, right, experience, which is a big step in and of itself. But it might turn out to be really hard to find kindred souls that you actually trust, have enough not just behavioral sobriety, but soul sobriety, that you really feel that they could be there for you in a way. It's not so easy to do. Why is that?
You
never found anyone.
Well, we trust yourself.
We'd be wise not to trust ourselves, and we don't trust anybody else. And we'd be wise not to trust anybody else because it really is. It's just like you know, the sliders on a what are those little games?
Pinball,
yeah. So it's like pinball. That's what we're doing. We're hanging out with each other in that kind of pinball consciousness, making shit up, then trying to provide solace, guidance, compassion, availability, listening, and no one can really, really feel perfectly satisfied with what anybody else is saying about anything, because that's really the depth of the insanity.
No one can feel satisfied with anything in this world or this life or this experience.
Interesting observation.
It's not just that context. It's
well,
everywhere. That's why we come. That's why we come here.
Maybe.
Dissatisfaction with everything else.
Could be. Hard to know.
I kind of like my time here pretty regularly.
Well, you know, this morning, something that I didn't do, but I have done it, where... Yeah, I mean, instead, what I did was I just became analytical. Like, what?
That's odd for you.
Yeah, I know. It's like, here's the question.
No, it's different than waking up in the morning. We know that.
Yeah. But is to go in.
It's like Francine becoming emotionally. It's emotional. It's so out of character.
Stop it. You're in control. Wait for me. Mm.
Why did you guys switch?
Yeah, let's switch personalities.
Is there like an SD card?
I don't think.
Is there an SD card? You could pull your SD
card
out of your wherever it's stored, and then you guys could swap SD cards, and then you could walk around being each other for the rest of the day.
But
sounds good to me.
is that the idea of just getting under it and getting into it and trying to understand or trying to get a sense of what that feeling
is. So what happens is there's an inertial quality of I, me, my consciousness that wants to get a handle on the miracle and myth of being. And so what it creates is a sense of durability of self, wanting to get understanding, advantage, a leg up, clarification, explanation, justification. And you see, as long as you're taking yourself on the road from moment to moment, you're crazy. Now, that's another curious thing to discover. Because you can see how often, if not for the last 50 decades, or more, we take ourselves on the road, meaning we project ourselves into an imaginary future to be the recipients of some great wisdom, some great insight, some great knowledge, for the purposes of what? Controlling the state.
What else is there to do?
That's great. Well, I don't know.
And you know, so it's funny because one of those sitcoms, which was it, where they're always in the bar. It's like most of them.
Cheers.
No, it's more recent. Where Neil Patrick Harris, they're always talking about future. Memory.
How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah, How I Met Your Mother.
I see. Sorry, I knew
that. To future me. Well, why are you doing that? So future me and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, future me.
I mean, they actually come out and say it. I thought that was pretty neat.
It is neat, yeah. Future me, right.
Who doesn't live in that to some extent?
Well, it's not easy to answer, and it's not all that valuable, really, because you're the sole inhabitant of the only universe that's here, which is yours. So there, who cares how anybody else lives? This is very strange. You know, we might be taught from a Judeo-Christian or a Buddhist or whatever, a Hindu point of view, that some kind of compassion, which is, extroverted, expressed toward or for the benefit of other, might be a useful thing, to cultivate. But we're insane. We're not capable of compassion. That doesn't mean we can't lend a hand financially, help somebody move, do the things that we do that looks like, you're a stand-up guy or woman and you think of others sometimes before yourself, and so you can be relied upon to make a contribution to someone else's life other than your own. But if you look real carefully and closely at what's motivating us from time, moment to moment to moment, it is a profound introversion. It's a profound... And why do we do that? It's not because we're bad or we're not compassionate or that we suffer from original sin. The reason we do it is because we have no choice. Whose other experience can you occupy? You cannot occupy someone else's experience. My dad, apparently, according to my mom and my sister, is at the Plainview Hospital. Serious bowel infection, diarrhea, nausea, disorientation, they thought it was C. diff, they came up negative, they thought it was this, it came up negative, an infectious disease guy said, and I haven't vetted it yet, that there was a serious bowel infection, maybe a tear, a leak or something, that it's affected his kidneys, and I don't know if that's a temporary thing or whether now he's a dialysis patient for the rest of his life, So what was I doing with it? I don't give a shit. What would a reasonable person do?
Cool.
Cancel appointments, jump in the car, drive out to Long Island, and go to the hospital. And I might be crazy, I don't know, because I'm not in charge of this. But I'm like, I don't really need to hear that. I'm not dropping everything to go do anything for anybody. I might do that for Beth. I probably would. But, you know what? 88 years old, cells start leaking, shit starts falling apart, Everything starts to go down. And guess who's responsible for your consciousness? You are. The way you live and the way you die is all yours. And that's all you got.
You know, the interesting thing is, at the same time as that, is that the idea that the thoughts are not ours, you know, thoughts are floating around. And we, this is sort of a Hederman type thing, you know, when we identify, you know, we grab the thought and make it ours. I mean, that seems to be happening at the same time, you know.
It all is. Anything you say about this, which is reflective of your so-called reminiscence of your experience, is as good as anything else you could say about it. Nothing is true, nothing is untrue. Nothing's real, nothing is unreal.
But I'm trying to...
I know you are.
Get these things together.
Yeah, yeah, sure you are. But you can't. You see, that's just it. You can't. You can't really tie anything together because you don't have any needle and you don't have any thread. And trying to rely on your mind, which is a referential, an arbitrary, abstract referential mechanism to sew anything together, is a waste of time because your mind is a sieve. Sieve. Everything's pouring through it.
Totally.
It can't hold anything.
Sieve is a good metaphor.
See how fucked this is?
Only momentarily, yeah, like as you're saying it. Then it's gone.
Okay. Maybe that's why we enjoy hanging out in this peculiar way that no one else could stand, is because we, you could say we reflect in real time on the impossibility of being you.
Yes.
And for some strange reason, we find a queer delight in that. An unusual delight. A gay delight. I don't know what to say.
Nice guy, Sanga guy. Is it true that you're homophobic?
Definitely.
There's a really big delight in the question.
Yeah.
You can't fool us that there's an answer.
Right.
We're not going to be sucked in.
When you stop being sucked, you stop being sucked.
That's it.
That's
so,
right.
So, but that doesn't mean that the poignancy, the interestedness, the delight in constantly facing the question,
yeah,
ever goes away.
No, that you could say, you know, if let's say you were realized, then okay, you're realized. That's good. That was easy. Then we could say, wow, there's ongoing, never-ending novelty and delight in the miracle of being, and nothing ever sticks to me, and I'm not even here. But, dude, sell me some of that. I mean, right in, you know, mainline that shit. And that happens to be the case. Yeah.
So since we're sitting here watching it all unfold,
right,
there is opportunity to make up some synchronous occurrence that you have a thought.
Right.
And somehow some shit happens.
Yeah.
And you make up that it looks like it's related to that.
Yeah.
You don't have to go any further than that. At least I'm not called upon to make a big deal out of that.
Right.
Wow, that was really interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if my anxiety caused it, or my wishful thinking caused it. We don't know what the origin of it is.
Yes.
But there continues to be, in my perception of
right,
watching the drama,
yep,
synchronicities.
Of course.
They look great.
Great.
They're great fun.
Yeah, great fun is good.
And so there's no answer to the question of what's causing it.
No.
But we can delight here.
Mm-hmm.
In wondering.
Wondering is key.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
And that's
wondering.
There's no end to it.
Is better than cleanliness when it comes to godliness. You prefer both? And we're
it's
glad that you do. Yeah.
One of the things we know is that whatever we think about it, it's at least 180% wrong.
Right, at least
so
start there.
If we,
it could be 270.
That Putin,
180%,
that Russian is a bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
We can bet that he's a fucking great good guy. he's the biggest friend Americans ever had.
Well, yes. I mean, it could be.
Yeah.
We're calling him that, right?
It's worth entertaining, believe me.
Just like it's worth entertaining that our politicians are fine, upstanding, with our best interests at heart, doing really fabulous jobs.
Stalin was a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one of the best cleansers we've ever known.
Can anybody?
When it talks, you know, cleanliness, godliness, Stalin, yeah. High up, very high up, very clean.
He got to do some serious work.
He really did. Yes, and so might the Ebola virus.
We're not going to know a goddamn thing about
yeah, Charlie really. Manson, really a mensch, you know?
Total mensch. Great neighbor.
Always cut his lawn.
One gal's just getting out now.
Is she?
45 years, longest surviving inmate of that prison.
Wow. That's a documentary.
I'm just suggesting that it's treacherous to have any position.
Yes.
No. Well, treacherous is a big word, but you could say that positions appear to occur.
They
identification
do.
And consequence and causal positions appear to occur. And if you observe them, you know, clearly, right, then you can see that they're the nature of a certain kind of fantasy, that they're ambiguous and abstract. They're virtual. They're imagined. All positions are imagined.
Well, there's some funny shit going on that's equally as funny as whatever was going on in the mythological, prehistoric, ancient Europe.
Sure.
That's all. Like, there's no way to make sense out of it. Building is dissolving. Absolutely that.
No. I mean, we don't
disappear.
We don't question with great enthusiasm why the bees make a perfect hexagon to store honey.
How anything happens in a day is like, what the fuck?
And we think that the magical powers, the sacred geometry, the morphic resonance that permits a honeybee, those surviving, to make a perfect hexagon to store honey is operating at that level, but not here. Here, where I live, I have the power of the frontal brain, of the neocortex, of a conscious mind, of clear indications of cause-effect and willpower.
I think we're outside of that.
And decision-making. Mm-hmm. We don't see that we also, whatever it is that we do, is also a perfect hexagram of building honey cells.
I don't know.
And we can see this across, right, mm-hmm. eons and eons of, call it recorded history, in terms of the culture of primates doing what we've done all throughout the, you know, four corners, if there were such a thing, of what we call Earth. It's a total miracle.
So you're telling us we can skip the guilt and the manipulation and the self-angst and just drop it all?
Well, yeah. Yeah, but yes, absolutely. No question. But you see how impossible it is to do that. As long as one retains or clings to the imagination of a disparate self.
That's what holds it together.
We're the same. See, it's peers. Right? It's peers. It's not this is responsible for that. It's all...
simultaneous.
It's, yeah, as a peer, it's, so it's really a simultaneity of symptom.
You can't drop the guilt by itself. You have to drop the whole
self.
That's why we're here.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we're here, because let's say you've gotten to the end of your prideful rope. And you have been unsuccessful, fortunately, enough times to see that no matter what you've read, what you put on the refrigerator, what bat gap interview you've just listened to, you know, whether you're buying a hybrid car or a Hummer or anything that you do, eating vegan, eating raw, eating, you're not going to out-spiritualize this. And so by virtue of failing... then you grow up. By virtue of failing, then you grow up. Then you wake up. Then you have the capacity, and it's a very adult capacity, to hang out, call it in a circle of peers, and get jiggy with this shit. Otherwise, you are hanging out with your own hallucinatory, right, faking, right, and then trying to fake everyone else out and going to see whatever kinds of healers and meditation experts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are trying to sell you a solution to your imaginary angst. And they can't help you. And the reason they can't help you is because if they don't get down to the marrow of the mirage of consciousness, then everything is just going to be appearing again in a virtual, ambiguous, right, unmanageable and unsatisfactory hallucination. That's it.
In like a constant state of adornment, and it's never enough.
Yep. That's right.
You're like, oh, well, I got that, and that didn't work, so yep. What else can I get?
Nice.
That's
and
it.
And
like,
when you
can I get something else? A badge?
Well, again, it's ROI consciousness,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, an insight into dukkha, insight into unsatisfactoriness is, in a sense, what we play around with.
Mm-hmm.
But at a very articulate level. You're not going to have this kind of conversation at the typical Buddhist retreat center or Vipassana retreat. You're just not. Because the vocabulary is not there. The intelligence is not there. The insight is not there.
Yeah.
What's there is bullshit from, you know, Buddhist liturgy turned into you had better sit on your ass and stay still, even though you may be aching, crying, weeping, catharting, you know, and we have to take you out for a thorazine injection still. And so that's that model. It's a kind of, you know, fake it until you make it, tough it out, sensory deprivation process, which makes you think that you're going to benefit somehow from that catharsis. And I have met people, you know, and I'm sure all of you have too, that have gone to 9-day retreats and 1-month retreats and 3-month retreats. And I met a Western yogi who did 3 years, you know, or something. Who's that Western Dzogchen clown? What's his name?
Lama Suryadas.
Yeah, Lama Suryadas.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a clown. But when it comes to tapas, right, and meditation stuff, you can't hold a candle to that guy. At least that's what he says. You know, he's done really, really serious, right, withholding from the universe, lengthy, silent, or isolated retreats, which makes it appear as if he's, you know, earned some kind of badge or earned some kind of wisdom. Well, I was sitting with him. This shouldn't do any of this. But I was sitting with him on the same porch as Beth and other friends in the company of our dear friend Harinam. And Harinam is like, he's got a samurai sword so sharp that you don't even realize your head's just been severed from your neck. You don't even realize that he's taken your head off. You still think you're you. Until when you walk off the porch, your head plops off your shoulders and then rolls down the driveway. And you have to go scrambling for it to put it back on. So there we were on the porch with Harinam, the master assassin. What a delightful, what a blessing. A master assassin. And there's our dear friend Suryadas, you know, a guy who's self-purportedly enlightened and read all these books and da-da-da-da-da. And I won't go into the details, but there he is, you know, complaining and hanging out with the guru, the real guru, to, you know, try to figure shit out about his life. And I'm like, that retreat didn't help? I'm sorry, did the retreat not help? Are you still a fucking self-incarcerated idiot? And the answer was, yeah, I'm still a fucking self-incarcerated idiot, but I make a lot of money, I sell a lot of books, and I do a lot of workshops, and I give people a lot of nachas, which is not the right word, from a Tibetan culture, so, you know, we're mixing metaphors. And you're like, okay, cool. Why pick on him? I mean, it's true for any of us, right? We continue to fool ourselves. Right? Until something happens, don't ask me what it is, when you just feel like it's, you know, appropriate, now appropriate for you to see if it might be worthwhile to stop fooling yourself. And then you check that out. Or it shows up. Somehow it just shows up in your life, you know, it shows up in your atmosphere. And you gravitate toward what it might feel like and look like. To have a different quality of conversation, a different quality of investigation, to see if it might be possible to stop fooling yourself. You can feel how your present experience is so, but you don't know a goddamn thing about it, and you don't need to. You see how you really don't need to negotiate, navigate, or justify anything.
You can stop making shit up.
Here.
Yeah, and even making shit up is okay. But if you're tuned, how do you put this? If you're tuned to a certain quality of refined self-reflection, that's why, you know, borrowing from Peter's lovely word, textural. Go to the texture of your present consciousness. It's a depth of being. It's a depth of refinement. It's a depth of subtlety. It's without consequence. You don't need to justify yourself. You don't need to come to anyone's rescue or even be by their side if they happen to be dying from a bowel infection and you happen to be their son. Why? Well, maybe because you stop taking your own sentience so seriously that it's like becomes kind of cool even were you to perish like right about now. Can we, just for fun, I'm not insisting on anything, what the fuck do I care? We're just playing around. Can I become comfortable with this being absolutely perishable? Next stop for this is the, what's that bin you put at the garden?
Compost.
The compost bin. Next stop.
Who's this Juan anyway?
Yeah. No, next stop for you is the compost bin.
Pass the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Definitely pass the Kool-Aid. There's no compassion. There's no need for any. There's no spiritual destination. That is so trivial. This is the miracle of being. Right here, right in your face. You could say in your soul, in your endocrine system, in your heart. Right? Transcendent of body. Transcendent of mind. Transcendent of birth. Transcendent of being. This being is transcendent of itself. Can we find a moment's peace, a moment's rest, right? Just here. I'm completely unencumbered, completely unadulterated, having no future, no past, no consequence.
And a chocolate chip cookie.
And then you treat yourself, of course, to a chocolate chip cookie. You'd be a fool not to. And as we become accustomed to, feeling this as miraculously unencumbered, then you're likely, that intelligence, that discovery, you know, I don't want to be hypnotizing anybody, right? It doesn't work anyway. You have to feel your own way into your own consciousness and get with it that it is a miracle beyond speech, a miracle beyond reference, a miracle beyond miracle. That word is even not even worth it. So this whole idea of peace and compassion and enlightenment and all of this crap is a big flatline.
The realization doesn't seem to occur until you get out of this obsessive thought machine.
Well, it's not like you have to get out of an obsessive thought machine in order for XYZ to occur. Remember, it's all peers.
It's all what?
Peers. It's all, it's all spontaneity.
Yeah.
There's no have to.
It's so
anything.
Attractive to consciousness, you know, to go into a thing, you know. exploration or whatever,
yes,
mind activity.
Right, yes. Agency and encumbrance. Yes.
Gobble up, whatever.
Nice. Of course it does. I mean, that's a very candid observation. Right? Agency and encumbrance, time, occur as peers. They're not the result of anything. All that's appearing is a peer of everything else that's appearing, including all interpretation, all presumption, all sensorial and supersensorial sensitivity is all occurring spontaneously at a peer level. We can use the word refinement and subtlety because we still have the capacity for a kind of comparative, right, literature. But the comparison is of your own state, your own condition, the equality of your consciousness. So I have the capacity of comparative literature, but the book I'm reading is, right, my own experience. It's that simple, really. The slightest, call it confidence, that you're able and or willing to place in your miraculously appearing, unencumbered experience will, like any good snowball rolling down a steep hill, become a very large base for a large snowman. Yeah. And it does take, you could say, kind of looks like it takes time, as in, right, the unfolding of a life, the unfolding of my experience, to become more humorously and adroitly familiar with the nature of hysteria, which assists us, or as you could say, tantamount with the relaxation from identification with that hysteria. Mm-hmm. Right? The capacity to observe the consequences and the so-called genesis of hysteria appearing in my first-hand experience as mind is a way of being, you could say, above it, looking down at it, and feeling it from a different perspective than being identified with it, right, at the same level of the embeddedness, inhabited, right? Inhabitedness. Yeah. So now what clicks in is a remarkable capacity for an open door, open window, into subtlety or the refinement of self-reflection of being. That's where you're living now, right? Because you just can't live anyplace else. You're just not going to jump in the car and ride hysterically to Long Island because of, you know, what? Right? You're like, no, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. You know? And my mom is...
Non-locally.
Yeah, right. And my mom is a genius. I mean, she's a genius. Man, she's good. So, you know, she'll go through a gamut of, call them hooking behaviors, right? To see which one will take. So one is hysteria.
Sure.
Victimization. Mental derangement. Not being able to put gas in the car. Not having anything in the house to eat. And then if it's not about her, the guilt is about, I should visit my father, which is, of course, true. You can't argue with any of these things. And then she'll move out of the position of being emotionally or psychologically so disturbed that she can't put gas in the car, even get clothes on, or find anything to eat in the house, to accusation, right? Guilt-tripping, cruel accusation. So the accusation was, well, what could possibly be keeping you from making the journey to Long Island to visit your father? It's certainly not your business. You don't have enough clients, right? Right? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, so I open up my Christ-like arms, and I'm like, okay, give me the spear. Give me the thorns. Give me the cross. Just draw every last ounce of blood out of me. What else you got? Right? Then she says after that remark, and that other crap you do, namely this crap.
Oh, yeah.
This crap. That other crap you do, how could that possibly have, you know, the intonation is, how could that possibly have any value that would keep you from da-da-da-da-da-da-da? So with that, I say, well, thank you so much for your comments on my crappy life. Mm-hmm. Right? Thanks for making my life crappy in about 3 seconds, which was kind of a guffaw. And then I felt, oh, how grateful am I that my mother is such a cruel, manipulative witch from hell that by having said that shit, it makes it so much easier not to fucking go there. Yeah, I'm like, I'm good. I'm blessed. I never realized how blessed I was, but today I kind of saw it through a different lens, like, wow, I'm really blessed. That kind of behavior, which I've known since, you know, I was conceived, or perhaps prior. I mean, that's, you know, structured my persona. Really, we all have some idea of what kind of work you have to do, right, in your own adult life, to put that kind of aggressive transference, projected cruelty onto your young soul for all the decades of your life. You have to. You're kind of forced to be enlightened, otherwise you're going to fucking kill yourself. And I'm thinking, thanks, Mom. Thanks, Mom. Took me the whole distance.
No, it's great. I know. Like, everyone's doing their family holidays. I'm like, I don't have to go.
And it's all about acute narcissistic disorientation and fear. It's so self-consumed. And I'm like, thanks for that too, because then I can
what's
reflect.
That word? Is it mifta? It's something's a blessing or something. What's the word?
Oh.
Yes, mitzvah. The blessing mitz.
Mitzvah.
She's a mitzvah.
She's a mitzvah.
That's right. Having a cruel narcissistic parent is a mitzvah. There's no question about it. Really, it really puts a little hair on your chest, as they say. Yeah. But, you know, it was useful. I mean, I went for a little walk and playing around with the feeling of all this, right? Mm-hmm. All of these very subtle or overt feelings that we have about how we organize our present consciousness or what we think is presently imposing on us, right, as obligations, as things we should do that we're not doing or not do that we should be not doing, et cetera, et cetera. And you can see there's a constant pool of an incredible palette of self-reflection around all of the relations we've had over the last 24 hours or 50-something years or encounters that we're even anticipating to be somehow unpleasant or, you know, that we might be insecure about. And we are, this is like swarming, right? It's swarming. And you can feel how these, very undulating crescendos occur, and your abdomen gets tight, right? Your throat gets tight. Your heart gets tight. You start moving into compensatory behaviors, right? Minimization behaviors, right? Aggressive, right? All kinds of compensatory behaviors get sprung into action physiologically, right? Psychologically, biologically.
Hormonally.
Right? Hormonally. The whole thing gets set in motion, and that's where we live. We live in an incredibly complex, unpredictable, hormonal maelstrom. And not just because we're going through puberty or, you know,
the tail end.
Or the tail end, right?
Lash out with irrational actions.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Mollify.
Yeah. And so whether we're at the water cooler or wherever we are, you know, on the sports field, we're all acting out from this very curious and really too complicated and too subtle atmosphere of compensatory, right, behavior and impulses that are being driven by what? Serotonin reflex? Memory? We don't even know. I mean, it's not like even the most adroit neurobiologists have any clue on what might be hierarchically set in motion for one thing to create a chain, to chain, and a chain, and a chain. Because if it really is, and I would suggest that it is, spontaneously arising peer-based expressiveness, expression, right? Then forget it, man.
Fear-based. Is that what you said?
Peer. Well, peer and fear.
I'm sorry.
Same, yeah. Peer-based, suggesting that we're not going to find a lowest or least common denominator neurobiologically, photonically, big bangly,
yeah.
Right? That could be held responsible for the maelstrom and the myth and the liberation of your present experience.
It's all holographic.
Yes, yes, right? So it's fractally holographic. But if you look anywhere in the hologram, you're going to see more reflection of that same hologram. You can never escape the hologram. And it being fractal is that its iterations go, what? Subtly into nothing forever and replicate.
The bosons just keep going.
The bosons just keep coming. And you'll never find, right, either particularly speaking or even in consciousness speak or biochemically speaking, you're not going to find the lowest common denominator of this peer-based luminosity.
I heard a description of Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
He's hooked up to a computer, and there are electrodes in his brain.
Uh-huh.
So the computer is capable of interpreting the blood flow through all of his neurons.
Okay.
And they've done enough time, so it produces language.
Okay.
So he thinks...
He's learned how to control his thinking to work with the machine and vice versa.
Well, the machine does the extrapolating.
Yeah, right.
Through temperature and blood flow.
Yeah.
And they turn
and it speaks for him.
And it speaks for him.
Yeah.
Sure, it doesn't.
And
then
the speculation
really,
is that,
yeah.
Well, they actually think they can do it. They can reconstitute that.
Okay.
And put it in a laser beam and project it out of space at the speed of light.
Oh, good Lord.
And then download it.
Wow.
So you think you have just traveled to Mars or the moon.
Whoa.
Yes.
Nice.
They're doing that now.
That's good science fiction.
That is.
That's great. So by harnessing the neural signals... And then projecting them through high-powered light, the hope is that there's sufficient quantum entanglement of a, in a manner of speaking, so that the brain thinks that it has actually traveled to and picked up sensorial impressions from that remote location that come back in whatever time delay, so that you so it's
you're like
it's
a telescope.
Sounds like hopeless.
Like
well, viewing, remote viewing is what, you know, there's a whole field of people doing remote viewing in a less technological way than that, but I think the metaphor is the same.
The same.
Yeah, remote viewing, that's cool.
That's cool.
That's real nice. Yep. Good, so I hope we can pollute other planets and domains with our remarkable selfishness.
Doesn't get to the bottom of it.
No, it can't.
Your narcissistic dreaming.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
That's cool. Why not? Yeah. We have no idea what this is, actually is, as if there were an actually is, or why the miracle and unencumbered nature of consciousness is appearing in what we call these, right, bioluminescent packets, and the imagination of life and birth, causality, right? And you can hear the louder, the marching of the police state growing louder and louder and louder as it comes around a street near you, right? So we have no idea. And the spontaneity of a shift in consciousness, which could travel as a quantum entangled miracle across the entire species, could happen and is happening from moment to moment. And we're not in charge of it. I mean, world peace, whether that's even worthwhile, you know, spending your time imagining, you know, could curiously, spontaneously occur. Everyone puts their weapons down.
Yeah.
Just because it finally made sense.
Yeah.
And not as the result of war.
Right.
Right? Could happen. I mean, this is it. This is world peace. This is what it looks like. This is world peace, you know. Duck the incoming. So let's say you're an enlightenment seeker, right? You're a seeker fucker, and you think you know what it is that you want or that you're after. Now, I mean, you've read Ramana Maharshi and Ramakrishna and Rick Archer.
Frank Hamilton.
Right? And all those, you know, clever atheists out there and the neurobiologists that are telling us so much about, you know, the hysteria of memory and decision making. So you've read all the gurus. You've seen all the TED Talks, right? You came to Pebble Hill last whenever Saturday and enjoyed, you know, Swami Ken. So now you see what it looks like when someone meditates 19 hours a day for some number of years, mm-hmm. right? I got a good video of Swami Ken falling asleep, and I was going to put it on my Facebook page.
Did you guys see it?
Yeah, I was there. I went.
I just played dress up Swami Barbie at home, and that was good too.
That's good. Swami Barbie in her convertible, her Malibu convertible.
She gets the right nail polish.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Fred played Ken.
Nice. Nibbling on your ear. It's the perfect thing to do. So, what do you, you know, so you have these impressions, right, of the people that you've met and the books that you've read and the documentaries that you've seen and right, so you have a very rich right vocabulary, not just of mental but emotional and subtle and spiritual and divine and transcendent experiences that you've had through everything that you've been exposed to. And some strange reason you're still interested in whatever. What the hell are we talking about? Enlightenment, right? Awakening, Kensho, something like that might mean, you know? I mean, we've seen Nirsagadatta gesticulate wildly. We've read all of the remarkable, subtle Sanskrit, right? The prescient things that he said about the nature of stuff and Gangaji. And, man, you know, we're loaded to the gills.
Psychedelics.
We've got Ram Dass and Terrence McKenna. We've got everybody, right? Yeah. So, what is it? What are you after? What are we hoping it? What are we hoping will occur? And how will it benefit us? Ameliorate us, fulfill us, actualize us, right? If there's an interest, or let's say you go see Swami Ken and you become a devotee, what do you want? You want to sit in a room for, what, 19 hours a day for 8 years, supposedly in Nirvikalpa Samadhi? You want that to happen? Fuck no. What? Or you listen to a guy like Peter Brown. You might even go to one of his retreats, you know, or see Paul Hederman as he weaves his way through town and makes you laugh hysterically about the frivolity of the self. Were any one of these, you know, illustrious, well-intentioned, sincere, and provocative voices? Okay. What? What do you want? What is it supposed to feel like? Right? What is the actualization of this?
You know, it's funny. It seems like sometimes I'll put something on because I'm thinking I've missed something, or you know, I wanted to recapture whatever
sure.
inspiration I had felt.
Yep.
Because I forget. You know.
Yeah.
I'm
right.
In a state of bewilderment. by virtue of forgetting.
Yes. Yes.
So I want to sort of relight that flame.
Okay, so let's say you're successful.
Priming, yes.
Let's say you're successful at, you know, relighting that flame. Then how does that feel? How do you know that you've been successful at relighting it? What happens to you? Are you lighter? Are you more poetic?
It's a whole brand new experience. It has nothing to do with whatever original motive I have.
Okay, so, right. But what are the satisfiers that accompany that brand new experience?
You know, I can only put it metaphorically, you know, things clicking into place, you know.
Okay.
Some order to it.
Well, what? You mean circumstances and events? What
no,
your wife says,
no,
what
no,
you say?
It's more like philosophy and theory.
I see. Theory clicking into place.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm freely admitted.
You're a very, very bold soul. There's no question about it. No one as fucked up as you would dare say anything like this.
Nice work.
Okay. And is there anything else that accompanies the clicking into place of, call it, you know, competing or variable theoretical impulses?
Well, a certain saturation after a period where I just need to go to silence or music, but I mean,
right. So is that, you know, is that awake then? Is that enlightenment? If that condition were to kind of remain with you?
No, it doesn't seem to make any difference.
It doesn't make any difference, does it?
Then I just pass out drooling on myself and I wake up after you.
Now, I mean, that's fun, I think. Maybe not. Maybe it's terrifying to see that no matter what we've done or what states or what ease we might have stumbled into, what remembrance, right, what inspiration we may have stumbled into, does it make any difference?
It seems like it should.
It seems like it should. Well, if you're going to be a true seeker fucker, it better, right? Because if you've gotten to a point of observing your own experience where it doesn't make a difference, I don't know what the next step in your journey is.
Well, the next step, if I'm going to take that path, is to start writing things down.
Okay.
And to get elaborate.
Fair enough.
And I've done that in the past.
Yeah.
And I could do it again.
You could.
Writing down your insights?
Borrowed insights. The insights.
Begged, borrowed, and stolen.
Yeah, the insights of other people.
Oh, you mean when you're listening to...
Yeah, things that like, whoa, yeah, I got to remember that.
Right. Well, that's what I'm aiming for. What's going on in the miracle of your experience when you say, wow, yeah, I got to remember that?
What's going on is the recognition of something that I knew.
Right.
And I just needed to be like, bing, you know?
I see. So there's a recognition that occurs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's an interesting gate, the gate of recognition. Even if the recognition is of, let's say, a spiritual type, right? That a seeker fucker would value as, wow, a very interesting, satisfying gate of recognition, right? And those last how long? And they do what for you?
Well, until you become a nonstop
recognizer.
Yeah.
So, all right. So then, see, that's where this goes to, right? Because we can't help but to see, or if we go through the process of munching on this, right, or doing a reduction sauce and boiling off all the stuff, then we get to this metaphor of until you become a constant or ongoing recognizer of, right? Yeah.
Well, see, here's something. The getting the two groups mixed up. The Jehovah's Witnesses that came to my door was one.
Uh-huh.
And the other was up at Music Fest, somebody passing out a little thing that says, "Are you good?" And it has, like, somebody from the 1950s with a bow tie, like, question mark, you know?
Wow.
And then it just refers to all kinds of Bible verses.
Yeah.
Saying, well, you think you're good.
Like, Ricky, don't lose that number.
So they'll have something like, well, if you ever thought of, like, hurting somebody, God said, or Jesus said, same deal, you know, if you had thought ill of somebody, it's the same as murdering them. So, in other words, it's like you're fucked. You know, you're in bad shape.
You are
so
fucked.
So you need us to help you out.
Like, get the hell out of the way. I'm going to kick it.
And
oh,
I'm
yeah,
like,
I was planning on going to hell, but thanks.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with these people. I'm not going to, like, go back and say, this is bullshit. This is stupid, you know. But at the same time, you know, when you're pressed in any situation, it's nice to have some kind of ability to respond.
So, was that one of the sought-after accoutrements of liberation?
A retort?
Is it, you want a retort?
You want to have something clever.
Could we make a list of retorts?
You could just flip in the bird.
Maybe that will be what you'll be working on. A book of retorts.
Yeah.
A book of retorts.
I like
retorts. Retorts for spiritual retards.
So when you read Nirsagadatta, you read I Am That. I mean, it just turns you on that he's got all these great retorts.
Yeah, on the right.
He knows just what to say.
Yeah.
No, not really. Okay. It's fun, I like to, you know, to look at the imagination that there is a benefit, a takeaway, a portfolio of appropriate retorts, a acknowledged, you know, and demonstrated sense of compassion, or that there's any possible utility for anything that could occur to the likes of you that could be associated with enlightenment accomplished.
You know, there's this confidence, if you want to call it that, I don't know what to call it exactly.
Yeah.
This immunity from getting sucked into these emotional
areas. Well, that's good. So then immunity is, right? I mean, that's a seductive destination for a self, right? Immunity, invulnerability,
superpowers.
Yeah, I hear they're developing a vaccine for that.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Then I don't think I want it. It's going to be injected from the outside.
Right.
Something I got to do myself.
Right. And you can see that immunity, right, needs the afflicted to be of any value.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody, though, in the depths of despair, you know.
Yes, like now.
Yeah, this is fun time.
No, this is fun time. Good.
You know, it needs a remedy, or otherwise.
Otherwise, what?
I don't know. It'll pass, but still.
they get the right antibiotic, and they live to fight another day. Or the damn thing becomes opportunistic, turns into a sepsis that they can't fight, and that's it. Right?
It seems like if we're screwed royally, if we do or say anything.
You mean in this group, or? Actually, I was thinking Jeff was talking a lot.
The royal screwing.
You get the timeout chair.
I gotta go on the timeout.
Well, we're constituting a reality where there isn't one.
Yes.
Holy Christ.
Holy Christ is right.
Well, there's something, but it's not what we think. It's not cause and effect.
This is the...
Well, we don't know quite what it is.
This is the, you know, let's just say if there were a cutting edge, not that there is one, for discursive rumination, for exploration, articulated in conversation, right? To go, as if there were a place to go. It would be right here, peering into the present nature of worldviews or positions, or call it what you will, something thought, felt, said, insisted upon about your present experience. That is not that it's a place, because it's too weirdly, miraculously expressing in a fountainous manner and leaving no residue of itself. So you can't ever go to it with respect to particulars, right? There's no point in going to the cutting edge of the mirage of consciousness by negotiating or navigating with any of its symptoms. Because they're coming, they're just coming at you too fast. You can't get out of the jet hose in your face to turn and deal with the apparency of any symptom. That's not trivial, to play with this, to feel this, to see this.
So, in a way, it's better to dematerialize, to see that you are standing there with a fire hose in your face.
Well, like, see, anytime, yes. And whenever we try to bring it to a poignant metaphoric reference, those are also self-dissolving. So we can use, and that's why, let's say, we have fun using sometimes repetitive and sometimes non-repetitive metaphors to play around with what's happening with you, to you, in you, as you, right about now. Because we can say a million things about it, right? Because it's so poetically, metaphorically rich and curious. And not one of the things that we might say about it are true. Not one. Because it's liquidating and refreshing as a simultaneity with no actual durability, only imagined durability. Now, seeing this, kicking it around, like you might play kick the can, you know, and down the street, just kicking it around, and everyone goes and hides, and then, right, stuff like that. It's hard to say what utility there is as you participate in exercising, in a manner of speaking, exercising the miraculous capacity that you possess for self-reflection. And what the behavioral, circumstantial outcomes might or might not be of giving your caloric beatitude to this strange endeavor. Having developing a reliable inventory of appropriate retort is very different than, right, not knowing what this is as a first-hand revelation.
Like, I want to use the word more honest, but that doesn't really make sense. But in a way, it is. You know, you're being a little bit more honest with yourself instead of trying to fool yourself and
You're being honest instead of being an outright liar.
Yeah. All right. I was just trying to be nice.
She was just trying to be nice and honest at the same time. Yeah, that's very sweet of you. Yeah.
Well, I'm full of shit.
Surprise, surprise. It can be
And I think it's a good sign that this becomes infuriating. Why does it become infuriating? Because the habit is to take, right, one's imaginary consciousness on the road for the satisfaction of some kind of utility, some kind of, you know, total occupation of enlightened mind.
It's fine if it's working out. It sucks when it doesn't. And you seem to get a little bit of a...
Well, it's delusional when it's working out. Fine, yeah, fine is another good way to portray it.
It can be counterproductive, you know, when it's working out, and you've got it figured out, and then...
See, that's what I get superstitious about, that kind of thing.
Ah, yes, right. You know, you can tell a genuine teacher if you have some horrible ruination occurring and they smile.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
That's another way to say you get no sympathy here.
Yeah. Well, you don't want it.
Yeah, no, I don't want it. I prefer it.
I don't want any sympathy.
Oh, no.
Right.
Here they go.
Yeah, they give you sympathy, and you're like, what's that all about?
You can always muster up a codependent friend to give you something if you really need it.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Then you end up trying to comfort them. You're like, all right, I don't really need your... It's okay.
Right.
Yeah, I was just venting. You
know? I'm not codependent. I'm co-comforting. I don't need to go to a meeting.
No.
Oh, of course.
I'm so comfortable.
Same to you.
Would it be unreasonable to interpret both the what's distressing, what's pleasurable, it's all is blessing? They're all blessings.
Well, why not? I mean, what's not a blessing? Here, now, this.
Because all occurrences are sourced in the same, from the same source.
I mean, if you were an African child with a distended belly who had 1,000 flies drinking the fluid from the perimeter of your eyes, you know, would that be a blessing? Right? I mean, if I'm a prisoner of war, or my family's just been murdered to death, or my brother's just been choked to death by a policeman, or you're right. I mean, now that it's impossible to pretty much hide anything, right? Because there's cameras everywhere, right? We're seeing more and more curious stories about, you know, the thrill of police brutality. Or a funny thing I heard on the radio, Rachel Maddow, was it? Maybe it was her. It was someone who was ranting on about the CIA or FBI does its own self-investigations when apparent, you know, collateral damage or persons are shot and killed. And in 121 cases of investigation, every death was legitimized.
Mm-hmm.
No errors were made. Not a one. You're like,
all
hey, well,
blessings.
Yeah, it's all a blessing.
Well, maybe where you are on the self...
It's just a point of view.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, maybe if you have the luxury of it being, like, for us, being stuck in traffic is a blessing, because...
There is a notion alive that whatever happens, most of what happens should or could have happened in a different way. That doesn't look like it worked out right.
Well, I think difficult moments are more attention getting. So
the news does.
Yeah, or difficult affective states can be like, yeah, so if you're in a certain kind of mood or something.
Well, karma comes in handy on those. All those things that you're describing.
You look at the urgency of your present bioluminous experience, right? The cogency, the primitiveness, the transcendence of your present bioluminescent expressiveness, the irrefutability. and you might discover absolutely clean palate where no meaning, no imagination, no time, no place, no justification, no encumbrance, no irritability is impinging upon you. The entire interpretive dream of consciousness, the play of consciousness, the dreaming of consciousness goes on absolutely unabated because there's nothing we can do about it anyway. And yet, right, where you sit, your asan, there's no affliction. There's no identification. The urgency to recreate or assert yourself, right, as an independent or individuated being has left you. Without all this noise in the system, distracting the miraculous beauty of awareness itself. Then your reflection is self-luminous, non-dual. And even the, you know, lovely impulse, philosophically or otherwise, to make sense of, to stitch together, to create a unified field theory like Ken Wilber, you know, that unmitigated asshole from hell. Oh, God, I'm so sorry, Ken. Really, I'm sorry about that. You see all of that horse shit, right? All of this evolution crap. Right, is just absolutely flatlined and off the table. It was imagined in the first place. It was manufactured. It was you know, absolute heresy. It was turned into, you know, a money making scheme. It was seductive. It was incarcerating. Not just him, but you know, all of these fuckers.
All his disciples.
Andrew Cohen. Samuel Bonder.
Craig Hamilton.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, you see, all of this horseshit is absolutely unnecessary. Because not only do you see the ruse of your own consciousness so clearly and, dare I say, affectionately, that there's no longer any affliction, but you see the ruse, right, of all of these other hucksters and racketeers. And there's, right, there's no hook.
What's interesting is it's like you are both taking it way more seriously and way less seriously at the
yes.
same time.
Yes, thank you. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, giving your heart to it, really giving the profundity of your luminous attention to the nature of consciousness in situ is, you could say, very serious. But not serious, foreboding serious, not serious with respect to the lamentation of consequences. Right.
Your primary.
Yes. Right. Your interest is. Right.
Yeah, you can still be playful. I mean, you are playful. It's like the ultimate.
Yes, I would say there's a certain looseness and lucidity there.
You experience the light of the surprise.
Yeah. That's right. And so how could you come up with a liturgy or a strategy or, you know, a set of consequences or milestones for anyone to follow on a ka-ching basis to be free? How could you do it?
The 10 steps.
Right? You can't do it. You can't do it. You can't reach out from, yes, the genesis of your own remarkable liberation. And then incarcerate anyone else by kowtowing to a liturgy, a strategy, right? A shadow, and then monetize it. Mm-hmm. Byron Katie. Sorry, really sorry about that.
That hurt.
Adyashanti. Oops. Oh, terrible. Yeah. You can't monetize it. That, I would say, is the view. And it's this. Right? It's not someplace else. It's not at the tail end of a retreat or after you became an internet minister or whatever the hell, you know, you did or didn't do or buried yourself in the hole in the ground with a screen on top, even though that's a lot of fun, but still, yeah. See?
Working on that?
Yeah, gotta work on that.
I got a great thing about it.
What other gift could you be given or give yourself than the revelation of this present, absolutely unencumbered, unafflicted moment, which is no moment at all? Anything else is bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's bullshit. The moment you create the imagination of space, time, right, corporeal incarceration, consequence, you're lying. You've self-imposed and or imposed complete heresy on whomever it is you may be speaking with.
Well, the practice here is a lot different than the practice that I've ever found anywhere. You know, I mean, yeah. It's interesting to talk, you know, practice that this guy's on.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it's like, it is practice, but it's not anything like any practice ever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Direct encounter. Have a direct encounter. Be conscious of your nature. Have a relationship with your nature. Feel it. See it. Unwind yourself from your own right portfolio of hysteria. Feel it. Discover that there's a confidence that you, for lack of a better word, possess. As you feel this, and that confidence is dynamic. It's not static. And that dynamism happens to love itself as you love yourself. The recognition of your unencumbered nature loves itself and sees that it's foolish to reside any place else. Mom. Hi, Mom. Hi, Mom. Yeah. This is the crap. This is the crap that I do that wastes all my time. Mom. Just imagine what it feels like that at every step of your life when you've loved yourself in the most transcendent way, in comes a voice that says, "You're no good, you jackass." Yeah, just imagine. Whew, wow.
Oh, seriously. And it's dripping self-righteousness.
Oh yeah. Well, of course.
God.
Right. Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah. Oh, I'll be weeping at the funeral for sure.
It's even better when it's the other way around, where you put everything down and then people are like, "You're the biggest teacher ever." I'm like, "What?"
Yeah.
No.
Right.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. On the tail end, you get some unexpected like recognition. You're like, "Please, don't even go there."
What could I possibly be teaching?
I don't even know what I'm saying.
I'm completely lost.
Okay.
If you become irritable, impatient, short-tempered and rude, good. Those are wonderful, wonderful signs that this is working.
So we get you banned at the Wegmans, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is getting under your skin.
For what it's worth, I practiced that with phone solicitation.
Uh-huh.
Calls are kind of out of the blue.
Right.
Hello, is Frank there?
Yeah.
What the hell do you want him for?
He's an idiot.
Jesus Christ.
What to do with insurance companies?
It's, my daughter is so delighted. She, it's like a comedy act. She hangs up right away. You have to pay a price for calling.
It's going to cost you to place this call. The feeling of true is true. It doesn't make it true. You can't really define what confidence is. We associate confidence with skill, with mastery, with enviable qualities of self-esteem. Not in this case. The confidence has nothing underneath it. There's no building or cement that you can point to. It's a strange texture of confidence. Right? Your non-afflicted, unencumbered being, which has no past and no future and no present even, which transcends biologic luminosity, does convey something we might refer to as confidence. Freedom from particularization. But it's the confidence of an Aikido master. It's empty.
Mm-hmm.
It's empty hand.
Yeah.